want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 366, recorded live on August 26, 2014. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat, with
Daryl W4,
Scott Burke, Sam,
Stevens at Infinitum.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. Also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com. For all your geocaching needs, cache-advance.com. Go find it. Boy, I tell you what, after taking two Benadryls, those words get really, really long when you try reading them. I just noticed. It's like, that's really a long word. Yeah, so I did. I accidentally took two Benadryl that were, I thought, non-drowsy. Is not so the head hard hat.
I was wondering, how do you accidentally take two Benadryls? Oops, I took two Benadryls. How did that happen?
I don't know, officer, but that's my story, and I'm keeping with it. So, yeah, jeez, oh, Pete, I'll tell you what. But, hey, you know, it's funny. I kept telling people how much I am not allergic to poison ivy, and I'm still very much convinced that I'm not. But I went out this weekend geocaching and hit something. It's not itchy. But really, really, really dark red rash that spreads. Scott, don't get me started. I'll tell you about that infection I got in Las Vegas. I swear. Don't go there, Ann. So anyways, and I'm not telling you where it is either. So anyways, it was I got something. I took some Benadryl thinking, okay, something's going to have to start clearing this stuff up. And it's like... So, yeah, this will be a lot of fun. So just poke it with a stick or mute me, whatever. Go on with the conversation. We'll be fine. Let's see. Other than that, they had a lot of fun this week with a new employment area, and so I'm doing a lot of lunchtime geocaches and trying to find out where's what. And that is always something that I love to do is go geocaching in a new area because it's like, oh, that's where that drugstore is, or oh, that's where that restaurant is, or oh, I didn't know that was there. It's a great way to learn a new area is doing lunchtime geocaches. You just got to get back in time before the boss gets mad at you. Daryl, you did a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well, Saturday was that big Helios 6 anomaly event in Detroit. That was a lot of fun and really intense. And unfortunately, I was getting over a little bit of a cold, so I couldn't stay for the after party. But I did participate in all of the good, fun, you know, competition, getting, you know, stuff blown up.
Was Detroit saved?
I saw the pictures of all the girls that were there.
Wow.
Oh, yes, you did.
There was women there.
Yes, there were. And unfortunately, my team only had one. Yeah, well, the way that the Enlightened handled it, and this is the way most teams or most cities handle, is they break up into small teams, and you're given your assignments as to which portals you have to tackle, and then we broke those. You know, those sub teams get broken up into even smaller groups that go and you know work on their portals. So you know, the little team that I was on, we called ourselves Team Grass. Mostly because we were standing on the grass all the time.
Scott, go.
And you know,
I thought it was because you were all high.
No, that would have made it a lot more fun, though. And we probably would have fit it better in some of the sections of Detroit. But in any case, the Enlightened
portal.
Did
get
manage to win.
Here, oh, here.
I got a pie.
Get the portal.
Oh, dear. But in any case, the Enlightened did manage to take Detroit by a big margin. It was not even really a contest at the end of the scoring.
Well, heck, your team didn't care.
Well, that said, I don't think I won any of the portals that I was on, except for the last one. So it was one of those, you know, I didn't do very well, but overall the team did very well. But the other thing is, it's kind of exciting. I mentioned that Cider
what,
Neon
more
contest.
More exciting than what you just told us? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, probably.
At least for me. I don't know if that's possible.
But remember I mentioned that Cider Neon contest a few weeks back, maybe even a few months back? Well, I actually won that with a photo of some blue neon signs around
you're
here.
Kidding.
And it's... Part of it is you know, came out to the word net, so that's the part that won.
Uh-huh.
It turns out it's a random drawing, and that's why that one won.
So what did you
I was
win?
Like, why would you pick that over some of the... Yeah, I had some really cool neon signs that I had grabbed. Mm-hmm. Even you know, even another section of that sign that I thought was a much cooler photo. And it turns out the reason that one won is because it's not... judged. It's just, you know, okay, here's the random number drawing. Of random entries tagged with
Release
that.
And what'd you win?
The same time Helios was?
No. That contest ended, I want to say, 2-3 weeks ago.
I could just see you going, wow, man, neon.
No. Well, that definitely would have been at the after party.
I don't know why I didn't win.
Hey, there is the official after party, and then there's an after party officially. And then, you know, a bunch of them were planning on, you know, staying out and closing down some of the bars downtown, like at the casino.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, at least it's a, so, you know, it's a fun activity for the whole brew.
Right? Yeah. And I'm sure the videos are out by now, but it was amazing to see the amount of production that Niantic, the company that actually owns and runs Ingress, which is then owned by Google, put into this thing. They had the drone out with the camera on it. They had multiple crews out with DSLRs and portable audio guys running around getting the audio. And so, yeah, there's a lot of production that went into this. So I'm kind of excited to see the video when it finally comes out.
Wow, that sounds great.
Me too.
All right. Mr. Corey, what were you up to?
Well, just slowly chugging along on that Seven Souvenirs of August. I'm making every day count. I finally got a multi, if you can believe it. It took me 2 days.
It was only the entire state of Montana.
How many stages was it?
They said it was 5, but I swear it was more because I kept going and there was another stage and then there was another stage. I'm like, when is this going to end? But I finally found the final and then I couldn't get this stupid box open.
Oh. There you go. Hasn't that always been your problem?
It was a puzzle at the end of it and I couldn't get it. You know, I thought about brute forcing the thing, but then they put a lot of work into it and I'm like, no. Okay. So I emailed him later and said, hey, these are the things that I tried. Was I even close? And he goes, no, you weren't even close. Here's how to open it.
Okay. So he actually did help you did open it. Cause I could hear all the people and all the listeners going, didn't sign, didn't get.
That's right.
Yeah. So I did a DNF. I logged it right. Because it was amazing. I hiked through. I mean, I had my little girls with me, 4 and 6, and they were the ones that kept saying, let's keep going. It said it was supposed to be like a mile, you know, 1.25 miles to 1.75, depending on the trails. I swear we went at least 2.5 miles.
So how did you actually get your multi then?
I went back.
Ah, okay. That's the part was missing. Okay, good stuff.
I went back. Yeah, I had to go back after I logged it because I signed it, DNF'd it, and then they emailed me later. They said, yeah, what you tried is not even close. So I'm going to help you out. Here's what you need. You need to be looking at this.
Pity on you.
Oh.
The arrow
points
here.
I don't know why I didn't even think about that.
So for the record, you went and did all the stages again, right, Corey? Because that's how you officially do it. You have to go and do all the stages again. Did you do that?
I don't think it counts if you don't.
Is there a mute button over here for Scott? Do I get that? Can Can I mute him out somewhere?
You know, just a...
No, I found him already.
There is no muting Scott. Scott can power through the mute.
Yes. He's like the resistance. Speaking of which, this would actually be a really good transition. Would be a good way in time to actually tell people about getting your achievement badge. Daryl, you want to hit that one? Because I'm stirring.
I was going to say, that's not so easy for you to say, apparently. We did get word from Eric over at Groundspeak, over at Geocaching HQ, that you actually don't get that seventh souvenir until you hit your trophy case. So you're going to want to make sure to go to geocaching.com and hit that banner on the very top, and that way you can actually register your seventh souvenir, if you already have all six of the others, and lock in your number so that you'll know where you made that achievement.
Do we have any rough how far we've gone in the week since we're wrapping up the month?
Yeah, we were just looking at that before the show, and we're only at like 47,000.
Okay, so wow. No 100,000.
Yeah, it tells me 47,308.
Wow.
There you go. The up-to-date numbers. So I don't think we're going to get to 100,000 at the end of the month, seeing that that's only, you know,
a few days
away.
Yep. But it's good to see as many as they have, because I honestly didn't think we were going to get as far as they did. And I really am glad that they're having the success that they did, that people are actually going out, having a good time and doing that. All right. Let's move on to the geocaching question of the day.
Geocaching question of the day.
Hey, cachers. I'm Lookout Lisa from Cache Advance, your host for the geocaching question of the day. Well, I've been caching since 2002, and I've been in the business of geocaching since 2005. Monday through Thursdays, we ask our followers on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ a question about geocaching.
We recently asked, what is your find rate or caches found per day? Well, after tallying all the answers, the average find rate is 2.394 caches per day. So here's what we heard. Callahan Matt on Twitter said, 1.49 overall, but 2.38 so far this year. I'm determined to keep that above 2 until the end of the year. Well, that's a great goal. Well, Mark on Facebook shared, officially it is 0.6957. But we only found 10 caches in our first 3 years we were members of GC.com, between 2010 and 2012. Since I got a GPS and started using it in 2013, the find rate is 1.772. You know, I did see a similar pattern, with many cachers reporting that they started caching then quit for some time, only to come back strong months or even years later. I've seen this over and over again, and really wish we could solve that problem of getting folks more, well, consistently hooked right away. And for those wondering, my find rate is 1.7477 caches per day. I did get a slow start, but there just weren't too many caches to find back in 2002. Well, as always, we really enjoyed hearing about cachers' find rates, and you can too if you follow us, Cache Advance, on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, for the geocaching question of the day. Thanks, happy
Lisa.
Caching.
And yes, because of the Benadryl, I went right over it. Why don't we jump right into the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. What's coming up this week, Daryl, on the GeoGearheads?
Well, this week is our Randomized 27 show. This week we're going to have Sonny of Podcaster join us to talk about a variety of different articles. And actually, we're probably not going to get much past the listener feedback this time.
Getting that much in to prep for it. That's great. Also on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast, I'm coming into a situation. I have got a whole plethora of new geocachers that, since I started my new job, that are really going literally every day now, going geocaching. But I'm hearing all this stuff of, wow, I'm just going to go out and plan a geocache right here, or, you know, why can't I put this big huge thing next to the airport, or why can't, there's this thing where you get from the, what I'm calling, from the mouths of new geocachers. And as a responsible geocacher in the community, and it's not just myself, I hope others do as well, trying to sway brand new geocachers from doing impulsive and sometimes many times the wrong thing just because they're so new to geocaching. So that's what we're going to be talking about tomorrow on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast. All right, excellent. Tonight's episode 366, Geocaching Adoption. And yes, we're not talking open or closed, though I would imagine some geocachers may want it that way. But what's all the things that deal with geocaching adoption? And, you know, there's a whole thing of different types of subjects we go on. Darryl, why don't we start off with how adoption actually works and why one would want to do this?
Yeah, geocaching.com, you can adopt two different types of things. Trackables, which a lot of people don't realize you can do, but it's the same form that you use for trackables, or non-grandfathered caches. That means pretty much any type of cache can be adopted except for the virtuals and the webcam caches. And that's actually a big point of contention because a lot of people are wondering how the virtuals and webcams can survive when you have geocachers dropping out of the sport. And, you know, if they do, you know, you can't do anything with those caches, and eventually when the account gets closed, those caches have to go away. But, yeah, for anything else, you can adopt your caches or trackables, and they form, which is kind of buried, but it's really easy to find if you know the URL, and it's just geocaching.com/adopt, and then you have to add the last slash behind it. It doesn't seem to, like, if you forget that last slash.
Did it give a 404 or does it just take it to geocaching.com? I can't remember.
It does. It gave me a 404 when I tried it the last time. So it's one of those situations. It's very important to have the slash. Otherwise, you will get a 404. But it is available in other spots. It's just buried and kind of tough to find.
I think for trading trackables, I did not even realize you could do that. That is very nice because there's a lot of times you go to an event. Sometimes you trade up a geocoin or a travel bug, especially geocoins for that particular case. Before, it used to be a pain if you could do it at all. And now to be able to do it that way is sweet.
Yeah, pretty much as long as I remember, it's been the same form. So if you've ever done it, chances are it's going to be the same that you've remembered. And, you know, like you were mentioning the trackables, one of the common things that we've seen throughout the trackable history has been people activating a trackable and then setting it into a cache with a note that says, this trackable has been activated. Right. When you find it, contact me, and I will adopt it to you, and it becomes your coin.
Wow.
They just don't want unactivated coins out in the wild. They want to make sure they know where all the coins are. So they're fine with giving away the coin. They like giving away the coin. They just want to make sure that it's activated and it's going to be out there and that they can watch the logs or whatever. So there's a lot of people, you know, especially early on, that were doing that with their personal and with the mystery geocoins. Many of them were the same way.
Yeah, and when they actually do the process, it's simply, and it's been a while since I've been on the page, I've actually adopted probably about 50 geocaches over time, where it's simply the other person acknowledges that you want to adopt the geocache, but it has to be done through this form. After that goes...
Yeah. It's real easy because all it is a one, well, I shouldn't say all it is because it is a few steps, but the initial form that you get is one field and you put in either the TB number, not the tracking number on the coin, but the actual TB number, and then you put in the GC number for geocache. You hit submit, it goes and verifies that it can do it, and then it will ask you if you're the owner to whom you want to adopt the cache or the trackable, and then put in a little bit of a note, and it emails them. If you're not, it sends the owner the request to adopt, and then you go put your note, and they get the email. From that, all you have to do is click on the link, or if you go to geocaching.com/adopt/, you'll actually see the first of your adoption requests. So I've done this where I'll take, you know, 20, 30 trackables and adopt them out all at once, and I'll get on the other side 20 or 30, and you just have to sit there, accept, refresh, you know, so you're just going through this cycle as it gets, you know, the next one, the next one, the next one. It's just a queue that you have to go through one by one.
I would love to see them come up with the same philosophy that they have now where you can, through some of the third-party people out there, where you can actually do multiples at the same time.
Yeah, well, you could even do that just with the list and checkboxes on you know, a simple form page. But I don't know that that's something that they're going to have a priority on, just because I don't think there's that many people doing it. You know, more for trackable, certainly, but for geocaches, you know, a lot of people don't want to adopt, because one of the problems is if you adopt the cache to someone, it's deducted from your hide count. It becomes their cache, and all of those stats go away. So unless it's a significant date or something like that, a lot of people just prefer to say, yeah, I'm just going to archive it. Here's the container if you want to redo it. Or, you know, I'm going to leave the container if you want to redo it. You know, go ahead. It's your cache now. But I don't want to adopt it because I don't want to lose credit for having hidden that cache.
Yeah, I kind of wondered why I literally have a large percentage. And this actually goes into a whole different subject about adoption. I never found the geocache. I adopted the geocache, and then when I went to do maintenance on it to make sure it actually was where they're at, I counted it as a find. And to some people, it's like,
yeah, right. Yeah, that's one of the ethics questions.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Or having you having me adopt one of your caches and then you go find it and log it as a find.
Yeah. Now, see that, you know, I'm not prone on, because I placed it. I know where it's at. That I can understand, where people kind of go, holy cow, you can't do that. But if somebody else actually placed it, I adopted it, so it's now physically mine, but I never found it before, those I count.
You see, to me, really what you need to be doing is, before you're accepting the adoption, you have to go out and have found it. And that's as much just a, you know, I know what this cache is, as it is a ethical thing. You know, before you adopt a cache, you want to know what the condition is. You know, you're not going to go buy a house or a car sight unseen.
Yeah, but in my particular
now,
case,
granted, this is nowhere near as severe, yeah, but it's the same kind of philosophy.
Yeah, in my particular case, the person was getting completely out of geocaching. They put in a very well-established series that had been there for a long time, and so when I did it, I got like 35 of them at a shot. And went that way. So for me, it wouldn't. If I had the time to do that, but it was kind of a time sensitive thing, so I just adopted them and went and found them. So I can understand what you're saying, though. That absolutely makes sense, and probably people would feel is a lot more ethical that way. But in my personal opinion with that, I didn't find it, so you know, I didn't hide it. So it's good enough.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah, no, that's totally legitimate, too. You know, my problem is if you don't know what that container is, and in some cases, you know, the cache owners will have kept good records, you'll have the photography to go with it, some kind of, you know, and we'll talk about that on GeoGearheads a little, Scott, right?
What?
Coming up with Evernote 2.
Oh, right. When is that?
Yeah. It's like 3 or 4 weeks out.
Oh, okay. Sure. But, yeah. Yay! Yes!
Yeah. As I totally blindsided Scott.
That's right. I was listening to
remind
it.
Remind me, Daryl, when it's time.
And that's where I heard that part.
Yeah, but yeah, it's that's what I like to do, is put everything into Evernote. So I'll keep a lot of notes about, you know, what's what, depending on the container. You know, granted, sometimes all it is in that little note is, here's my original coordinates and a photo of the container in its hiding place. That might be it. But at least having that gives whomever is going to adopt it some good information.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I do that too, Daryl.
Yes, I know that you were doing something similar.
I take pictures of all my caches.
Well, it beats what I used to do. I've got a notebook somewhere, my secret stash notebook, where it was top secret. Nobody was allowed to look at it because it had
the answers.
It had all the descriptions and the details of how to find that lamp post hide. I mean, you know, you have to do that. Evernote's so much easier.
Oh, so much
all mine's right here. I don't need no stinking Evernote.
Yeah, yeah. Wait till that drains.
And for the record, Corey buys
25.
Cars sight unseen. For the record,
five of these.
You have five hides.
I keep it simple.
So let's put it this way: when do you get to that area of when should you adopt as opposed to when should you archive?
That's a very good question, and I'm going to suggest we go to Corey for that since he only has five.
No, I said I had 25. I said I had five of these. Five
oh, okay.
25.
Five fingers?
So 25. We'll go to you first. How's that sound?
I did a little bit of archive. Well, when I moved, because I moved from Utah to Montana, I did some of both. I did archiving. I archived about a dozen of them. I adopted out another dozen of them. And then I still do have, I think I've got two or three down there that I still actually personally own. Because until I move my mom up, they're not going anywhere because, yeah, they're not going anywhere. I have enough people down there that are going to take care of them for me if something does go wrong, but they're very well built. They're not going to be going anywhere.
I think that's the key point, though, having somebody...
The choice was... What's that?
I think the key point that you put on there that people should take away with this, if you're in a situation like that, you have to have somebody there that's going to take care of them for you.
Yeah. I mean, there were some that were just some of my first hides, I just kind of like archived them because they were, you know, I was getting into them and they really weren't that good. And so I archived them. Were some that people really liked and they really enjoyed, and people started building around them. And when I moved, they're like, "Hey, when you go, I want to take this over." And you know, so they wanted to go there. I set up a list and said, "Hey, if any of you guys want to take over any of these, let me know before I leave." And other ones I threw out there on, on the Facebook page for Southern Utah Geocachers and said, "Hey, if anybody wants to take any of these over, you know, feel free to. Otherwise, you know, if they just went undone, I had somebody who really was interested in a lot of my containers, and I says, here, I don't have the time because I'm leaving in 2 weeks. If you want to do the maintenance, here's all my cords, and I'm going to archive them, and you can have my containers." Mm-hmm. So,
how did that work out, just out of curiosity?
Oh, they were happy. They placed about seven new hides shortly after.
That's awesome. Now, that does make a lot of sense if you've got somebody that's willing to go through that and actually take over, reimagine them to what they want them to be, and just utilize the containers. I think that's a great way to go.
Well, in that case, it sounds almost like what you should do is archive them once the new hider has the new one ready to go, because it is at that point a new cache. You know, it kind of goes back to the guidance that we were given from when the ape cache in Washington disappeared. You know, if you can't save anything of the original hide, is it the original hide?
That's a very good point.
So you're saying when a cache goes missing, or gets muggled.
I did archive the caches that I had there, and I gave them the coordinates, and they grabbed the containers, and they made new hides out of them.
Okay, yeah, so that's exactly what you did.
Yeah.
Right, so Daryl, what you're saying
so
is that anytime...
They took the containers and placed them other places. So they didn't use the same hide, no.
They used the same containers, not the same hide.
Right.
Location, yeah.
But, Daryl, under your theory, then, we should be archiving every cache that goes missing or gets muggled, is what you're saying.
Not necessarily, but that's kind of the guidance that we got from geocaching.com. You know, if you don't have the same type of container, you know, in that case, it was a weird ammo can that was painted funnily, you know. They had multiple containers.
Funnily?
Yes, I'm making up words. I have to have something
for
Dr.
Sure
D,
heard that
right?
Correctly. Just to make it, go ahead.
Funnily. Yes, funnily. In the form of a funnel.
Right. But, you know, they had a couple of spare containers, and when they ran out of those, that's when it was pretty much archived. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the guidance we got from that, is if it's not going to be the same basic hide, then it should be archived and replaced with something new. And I've done that a number of times on some of my caches. You know, if I have to move it a few feet, then it's the same cache. If I have to move it and replace the container, well, then it's not the same cache anymore, so I archive and relist it. Usually, really? I'll leave the old one disabled until I get the new one ready to go to make sure that no one else steals the location. But, that's the way that I'll tend to do that. There are other times where I've just archived it and said, okay, someone else can do a hide in this this area. I don't want to maintain this one anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never really saw the need for an adoption. I could understand if it's a power trail or something, or a really, really cool cache with a ton of favorite points. But something other than that, I can't comprehend why you just archive it and let, especially if you're moving out of the area, let somebody, let an area person.
There's times where you've got series.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, like a trail or something like that. I get. Yeah. I get that. Yeah.
Well, here.
There's one.
I was going to say, here's the way that I break it down now.
Go ahead, Daryl.
It depends on the significance of the cache. So what that comes down to for me is it an older cache maybe? Something that's got some kind of significance for whatever reason, date, something like that, where it's grandfathered in. And remember that you can't grandfather, or you can't adopt grandfathered caches, but is it something like this park will not allow a new cache, but they're allowing this cache because it was placed before such and such date. So mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, yeah, that should stick around. But also significance, is it a really cool quality hide? Is it a great puzzle? Is it a challenge cache that you just can't take care of anymore and need someone else to take it over? That kind of stuff, yeah, that should be adopted. But pretty much other than that, I'd say archive it and let someone else place a
right.
new cache there.
I agree.
Open up that space. And I've been a big advocate of replacing caches on a regular basis so there's more new caches to hide, or to find, rather. I don't like caches sitting out there when you have, let's say 100 caches in a 2 or 3 mile radius that are all placed within a month or two of each other. None of them are substantially different hides. I'm not saying like LPCs necessarily, but if they're all ammo cans in these days are fairly rare, so they should probably stick around. Mm-hmm. But if they're all some lock and lock container tossed under a pile of sticks, well, what's the significance of that? Why not archive it, create a new cache, let people find something new? And if nothing else, it's the same cache in a little different location, but it's a new cache.
Right. Well, I remember in Chicago about a year ago, we had a cacher, Ziggy. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, Daryl.
I've DNF'd a few of his caches.
Horrible cords, mostly park and grabs, and he quit the game. And so he put them up for adoption. Somebody adopted, I think, over half of them. I think Ziggy had like 700 hides out there.
Wow.
And somebody adopted maybe 500 of them. Now, 200 got archived, which is pretty good, but there's still 500 of those crap hides out there where you could have archived them all. And, he's hogging, like one suburb, he's hogging virtually the entire suburb. There's no, you can't hide in that suburb anymore. There's nowhere to hide because he's got all this, and he didn't even pick random spots. So he's literally hogging like a whole park. He doesn't like put it like at that end and in a park you could fit 6 caches, he put 2 in, but he's hogging the whole park, because it's mm-hmm. right in the middle, So he's literally hogging an entire suburb. And it's just, why wouldn't that just get archived? Why would somebody even adopt those? But they were adopted, But
well, and you're talking about caches that are not significant for anything other than it's a cache at that location.
Right.
So why bother keeping them around and alive? You're better off to archive them and create new caches or let people do it themselves.
The poor locals can't even put a cache out because Ziggy's hogging the whole suburb,
Give it time. Or go on a vigilante crusade and start muggling.
No, we don't adhere to muggling.
I don't advocate that. Sorry.
All views expressed by Corey is sent to Corey Stevens at Infinitum. But yeah,
you know. Oh, wait, sorry. Is it my turn?
Yes, now it's your turn.
I can see how some people that have been in the game for a long time and they want to keep a legacy. But I don't see that. I mean, I could see where I would want to have a bunch of ones adopted because these were the special ones to me, and they're actually really good, and, you know, let them go on instead of having them get archived. But on the other hand, I'm also a big advocate, like Daryl is, of move it on, you know, give somebody else a chance to get something in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if it's a 10-year-old cache or more, then chances are it should be adopted just to keep those caches around.
Keep it out there. Right. I agree with that. Yeah,
so if it's something really spectacular, you know, like let's say for whatever reason WV Tim decided he can't maintain his caches anymore. I'd hate to see those caches be archived. I'd rather see someone else take them over because those are really good, intense caches. Mm-hmm.
I'll adopt them and fly over to West Virginia and maintain them.
I don't know they would have a problem with somebody taking over there. Just here's from what I met there.
Here's a quick question, real quick. Daryl, you might know the answer to this. I've never adopted nor had one adopted, so I have no idea. Do you have to be a premium member to adopt a cache, or can anybody adopt it?
No, anyone can adopt a cache.
Okay, now what if here it's my six asked in the chat room. What if it's a premium member, or what if a non-premium adopts a premium? What happens to that cache, you know? Come on, Daryl, you have answers for everything. Don't look at me dumb-faced. What's the answer?
I got Cylon. I don't know about you.
I was going to say, I think the Daleks have gotten to him.
Me?
Sorry, try one more time, Scott, because that kind of droned it out.
Oh, sorry, okay. So if a non-premium member adopts a premium cache, what happens to it?
I think even non-premium members can hide premium-only caches.
Can they really?
Yeah. Really? That's just a checkbox. But
they just can't find them.
I can't find it, but I can hide it.
I mean, right. Right.
They can't find their own cache to maintain it.
Well, if it's your own cache, you shouldn't be finding it anyway.
Oh, see, there it goes around.
Right, Andy?
It goes around. I'm a premium member, so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me log in with the Cachemaniacs account, since that one is not a premium account. And I will be able to tell you in just a moment, because I am pretty sure. Actually, I'm not sure I can tell you real quick, because they have a new form for listing caches. And I don't think it gives us the... I know that it would take me far longer to figure it out from logging a new cache. Right. Yeah, so I'm not going to be able to tell quick and easy.
So even if you're a non-premium, you should, in theory, be able to adopt a premium.
Yes, you should be able to adopt, and I'm pretty sure... I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that even basic members can hide premium-only caches.
Really, that's interesting.
Good stuff. Well, again, if you're interested in looking about everything that you want to know about adopting, make sure that you go to www.geocaching.com/adopt/. Make sure you get that last slash in there and check it out. I think it's a whole whopping one field, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's pretty easy and it's fun to do. Just make sure it's something worth adopting.
Yeah, it's one field to start, and then you'll get, you know, after it validates it, then there's more fields to deal with.
Yes. All right, good stuff. Good discussion tonight, folks. I want to thank Daryl and Scott and Corey for, as usual, fantastic job, guys. Next week, we want to do a reminder that it's going to be Cacher Coffee next week. And also, we're still looking for some nice feedback in from our viewers about these 7 souvenirs of August. What you felt about it, send it in to headhardhat@geocachingpodcast.com, and we'll get those in on the show. That'll be coming up in about 2 weeks. We want to thank you fine folks for subscribing and coming in and listening to the Geocaching Podcast. We'd like to thank cache-advance.com. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast. right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Heart Hat production and is produced by Daryl Wattenberg and Andy Smith. This show is copyright 2014 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.